Blog Talk Radio.
Tragically, and perhaps irreversibly. There's now over 25 feet of water where there was once city streets and thriving neighborhoods. I hate the way they betray us in the media. We see a black family, it says they're looting. See a white family, it says they're looking for food, and you know that it's been 5 days because most of the people are black, and even for me to complain about, I would be a hypocrite because I've tried to turn away from the TV because it's too hard to watch. I've even been shopping before even giving a donation, so now I'm calling my business manager right now to see what is the...
Hello, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio, and I'm your host, Terry Littlejohn, and I'm bringing you part two of the Katrina. The storm continues. Now, last week we talked about the 10-year anniversary of Katrina and what was going on the ground when the storm hit and what caused the flooding there, because a lot of people think it was just the storm Katrina that caused the severe flooding that really did a lot of damage to the Ninth Ward in New Orleans. But as we spoke about last week, the major problem was that the levees broke. The levees were poorly constructed, poorly built. And the government knew this, but they were not funded to repair these levees. So once the water rose to a certain height, the levees broke, and that is why so much flooding occurred so fast, where people who were in their homes tried to evacuate or tried to go to the top level. The water rose so fast in that area because the levee broke. Now this week I decided to focus on the flooding, the housing, and the education, the post-Katrina, the post-storm, because the storm continues, you guys. In New Orleans, the flooding would occur again. The housing, who has it truly helped post-Katrina? Who really has been benefited by the new housing that they have there? The education, the entire school system was taken apart and taken away from the government, and they created all new charter schools. Who is this benefiting? So we're going to break this down, and I challenge each and every one of my listeners to please do your research, because there's a lot of pros and a lot of cons about these issues. And there's a lot of people out there that have their own opinion about it. But I'm here to bring you the truth. I did as much research as I could at the time, but I really wanted to speak to a friend of mine who actually lives in New Orleans, but I was not able to reach her because I need to get the facts from the people. I've watched several programs about the post-Katrina, the interviews that they've done with the different people. Because, see, the people there will tell you the truth. The media only tells you what they want you to hear. So I don't really listen to the media for the truth. I try to research. Now we're going to start with the flooding. If you do the research about the flooding that occurred, you'll see what was really going on with the levee. But there's also another area that they don't talk about in the national media, and that is the wetlands. There's a lot of wetlands down in New Orleans that had a lot of trees that were growing there. And with these trees being there, it would help sustain the water whenever the water would rise to a certain level. the trees would block the water. And not only were the trees there to block the water, but there was a lot of different animals and different things that were there because of these trees. But you had corporations come there, and they dug wells there, all wells, and they dug channels there. And from this, they had to cut down a lot of those trees, a lot of that wetland. So now you have this open space with all of these different canals going through there, that area. So when the water rises, it's going to go right into all that open space, and there's nothing there to stop it. And there's a lot of other reasons that those trees are needed, that wetland needs to be preserved. But because people were hungry, money hungry, as we have seen happen in this country in the last 100 years, the money is more important than the people. So they had a lot of offshore oil plants down there, and they were getting a lot of money, oil revenue. And we know the situation with the oil and the greed that's behind it. So they were allowed to come there. But they didn't understand that this area, this wetland where all the water overflows, it has a lot to do with the Mississippi River. Now, mind you, the Mississippi River runs all through the Midwest, and this affects a lot of different things that river is used for. And people don't understand that. The import and exports that come and go through that Gulf area down in Louisiana is responsible for the majority of the items that we receive through the shipping area in this country. So we allowed all companies to come there and take away all of these trees. So when it floods there, this affects the entire project of what we need to do in order for our export and import to continue in its safe manner. Now also, mind you, that the Ninth Ward sits very close to these levees. The Ninth Ward sits very close to these wetlands. This Mississippi River Gulf is very close to the Ninth Ward. And these things that this Gulf can provide, they're very important. But we allowed people to come in. It was more than 1,000 acres. And we allowed the oil companies to come in. In 1956 is when it started, and by 1978, only 28 acres of forest remained. But you don't hear organizations crying about this. You know, PETA is always hollering and yelling and screaming about something. And then when the lion was killed in Africa, people were screaming and hollering and signing a petition about this. And they're always talking about the ozone layer. But you never hear people, the mainstream media, talking about things like this that affect us all. Why, I do not know. So we have to ask ourselves, if there was another hurricane in New Orleans, even though the levees have been repaired and rebuilt, what would happen with the wetland areas? And if we continue to allow these oil companies to go in there and damage this area and destroy it, what will happen in the future for our trade? This is a lot that people don't understand. It's very important. Now, the housing. This is something that's really going on across America, and we've seen it happen before, and it continues. You know, it goes all the way back to when they took an entire city out, the Oklahoma, the city that was there in Oklahoma in the 20s and 30s, and they came and just destroyed the entire city because it was of black wealthy people, had their own banks, their own everything, and some things occurred, and they went in there and they destroyed the entire city. So whenever we have an area, a housing area, that they can see where in the future the market is going to change and that area is going to be worth something, meaning that at that moment it doesn't appear to be worth a lot. But if they can foresee in the future where maybe 10, 15, 20 years down the line, this area, for whatever reasons that they know of, it's going to be booming. It's called gentrification, and they begin to come in there and they buy the homes up really cheap, and then they turn this neighborhood around. Because for whatever reason in this country, when African Americans or blacks live in an area, they tend not to have the worth that they would in their property if it were majority Caucasian white Americans living there. And when white Americans and Caucasians move into an area, the businesses follow them. The schools turn around and become very good schools. The property taxes go down. It becomes a affluent area, and they call that gentrification. And it happens all over this country. And now we see that occurring here in New Orleans, where the majority of the people in New Orleans prior to the Katrina were poor people. And they had their homes for many, many years, probably were passed down from generation to generation. And after the storm, they had to actually sue the government to get enough money to rebuild their homes because, see, their homes were not worth a lot of money. But that's what they owned. They were theirs. So when the government came out with this money that he was giving the people to rebuild their homes, when it got to the Ninth Ward, the money that they gave them was not enough to rebuild because the way the refund or the help, the aid was written, it was just supposed to give them the amount of money that their house was worth at the time. And as I explained earlier, when an African-American or black person owns a home in this country, it automatically depreciates because of the way the system is set up. So when the government decided to give them funds in New Orleans to rebuild their homes, they only gave them the amount of money that the house was actually worth at the time of the storm. They did not give them the enough money to rebuild the home. Now, we all know that if majority of those people in the Ninth Ward had already paid for their homes, and their homes were paid off, and maybe they only paid $20,000 for their home, but that could have been 50 years before the storm, 20 years before the storm. And when the housing market changes at the time of the storm, in order for them to rebuild that house, it may cost $100,000. So if they went to the government and the government only gave them $20,000 because that's all they paid for the house, that's all that the mortgage company said the house at the time they bought it was purchased for, that's all they were going to get. So they had to go and fight the government to try to get enough money to rebuild their homes. Now, they did not win, but they ended up with a lawsuit that enabled them to get a few more dollars. Let's say $62 million versus the billions that was needed to actually give them the amount of money. But then you have in the affluent areas where it's mostly Caucasian people, their homes keep their value. So when the flood hit, they were able to get enough money to rebuild for their homes. So the housing market in New Orleans is not where it needs to be. There are a lot of people now that still can't rebuild. The Ninth Ward has not been rebuilt. It has not been given the funds that it needs. You have a lot of different people like Brad Pitt and other people that are going down there building homes. And Brad Pitt built, I believe, 100 homes, but it's still not enough. There's still a lot of vacant homes there. So it's still not enough. And you have other people that are trying to build, but the laws and the rules, the way the contracts are set up, it makes it very difficult. Also, people don't want to come back into the Ninth Ward because there's not enough resources there. They won't build a grocery store there because they say there's not enough people. And the people won't come because they don't have anywhere to shop. And as this young man asked, who decided to come back to the Ninth Ward and open up a small grocery store, he asked the question, which came first, the chicken or the egg? What do we need? If you need a grocery store, why not build it? When you go and you see these new subdivisions popping up. They not only pop up their housing, they pop up the grocery stores, they pop up the gas stations, everything that they need to sustain that subdivision, they have it. And it's mostly in affluent subdivisions where you have Caucasians, Americans. But for whatever reason, African Americans, they don't see a worth when it comes to us living in neighborhoods. They don't see it. They don't see us having anything. They want us to continue to live in these slums. They want us to continue to live with no grocery stores. They want us to continue to have to drive and use our gas up to go and find things that we need. They want us to continue to put the mileage on our cars. They want our roads to continue to be raggedy. I mean, if you ever drive through cities, just do this when you go visit a city or in your own city. Drive through the cities and look at the streets. And they try to tell you that the way they repair the streets is based off your property taxes, okay? Now, I know for a fact the property taxes in the cities, especially in different areas where well, put it like this, the property taxes in a lot of suburbs where there's gentrification happening, where you have African Americans, the property taxes are very high. And for whatever reason, the schools are very bad, but there's a lot of property tax. But the streets are still raggedy. So if you're taking the property taxes from the people, and you're supposed to be fixing the streets, why is the streets always raggedy? When you drive into the city where there's plenty of houses, so you should have plenty of property taxes, whether it's rented property or not, the property tax still has to be paid. How is it that when you get into the city, as you get closer into the city and you get into the area where there's poor people living, the streets are raggedy? So not only do we have to deal with the streets tearing up the cars, we have to deal with the fact that the gas prices are higher there. Your cars, you can't afford a brand new car, but the car that you can afford, you have to be careful because if you drive constantly on these streets, it's going to get tore up. And this is all across America. So this is happening in New Orleans. And if you take New Orleans, you can use that as a model for what is going on in all the poor areas across this country. So we have a severe problem. And then we won't talk about the education system because I really get frustrated when I think about it, how a lot of people are saying that these charter schools are the way to go for our future. Now, mind you, some charter schools may be the way to go for some children. But when you look at the system and the charter school system, there is no way you should take an entire school system and make it just be one system. You can never win with just one system. It's called Monopoly. You play the game of Monopoly. The objective is to own as much as you can on that board. So why would they take this city and let a charter system come in to control all the schools? Now, it may not be the same charter company that's controlling it, but it's still the same process. All the schools are charter now. There are no public schools left in New Orleans. And not only did they change the school system, but they changed the teachers as well. Now, I used to teach at a charter school, and I'm telling you, all charter schools are not ran to benefit our children. You have a corporation that's running a school. The bottom line is they want money. They want to make money. And the way the school system is set up in this country is based off of test scores. So the higher the test scores, the more money you're going to get, the longer you'll stay open. So I've seen people prepare these children for tests, but they're not learning anything. They're just preparing them for tests. So you can teach a person how to take a test, but can you teach a person how to retain the information that you're giving them? So all they did with these children was prepare them to take these tests, because that's what drives these systems, these schools, these tests. Tests don't prove anything about what your child really, truly knows and understands. If all you're teaching them is how to take the test, and I've seen it with my own eyes, they coax them, they coach them along the way, even during the test, so that their test scores can say, hey, at the charter school, these kids test way better than the public schools, when it's really not true. And then they have these teachers that come from this organization called Teach for America, and this is what's really going on in New Orleans. And a lot of these teachers are young, just graduated Caucasians, and they have to go and teach at a school for a year. It's part of the program, and once they do that for a year, then they can maneuver into the program the way they want to. So they'll go into these areas where they know nothing about the culture, nothing about the children. They don't want to be there, but they know all they got to do is do a year or two, and they're good to go. So they're thrown into this area, thrown in there with these children and their culture, and they know nothing about it. And we know that our children do much better when they have teachers of their own peers, just like you get a jury of your own peers. Children learn much better when they have someone in front of them that understands their culture and understands them. So not only did they make these schools charter, they brought in these teachers that don't even understand the children. There's 87% African-American children in the public school system in New Orleans, in the charter school system, I would say, but there's only 54% of African-American teachers there. So this program, the Teachers for America, I'm sure if you research and you find out who the lobbyists are behind it, you'll see that they had everything to do with convincing New Orleans, convincing the rest of the country to go with charter schools, because it's big money. It's not about educating our children. It's not about them becoming better students, which they say the graduation rate is better. They try to give you the numbers. They try to push the numbers. But like I said, you could push a child along. You could teach them how to take a test. You could convince them that what they're doing is really learning. But are they really learning? What are they learning? Because every child doesn't need a computer database telling them this is the course you are to take. This is what you should be learning. This is the system that you should use. Now, you got a lot of these children post-Katrina have a lot of psychological problems, and we're going to get into that next week. I'm going to talk about the psychological effect of children in the inner city across America, the war zones they've been living in for many, many years, and we wonder why they're killing each other. When they've been living in a war zone for decades, and no one's ever stopped to think about the mental state of mind. And they say, well, how come you say Black Lives Matter, but they kill each other. Well, if all of your life you've been in a war zone and you don't think you matter, so when you grow up and then the first thing you can go get at the corner is a gun and some drugs, what do you think's going to happen? Where's the value going to come from? So I'm going to really get into that next week and really break it down, the psychological effect these inner cities across America have had on our black people. But people don't understand. And these charter schools, they're not really equipped to deal with the psychological effect of post-Katrina. They're not really able to deal with the psychological effect inner city child. I've seen it for myself firsthand when I taught at the charter school in the inner city. They were not equipped to deal with these children and what these children in inner cities go through, because they were people sitting up in a corporate office studying all these things about education and saying, this is the way you teach a child. This is the way you do this. The children should do this. And they gave it as an example across the board. You cannot teach every child the same way. And then they have these Teach for America teachers coming in who have went and learned these programs and learned this way of teaching, which has nothing to do with our inner city children who are going through post-trauma stress every day. So I challenge everyone out there to really see, what is the storm? Where is the storm? Are we walking in it every day? Is the storm all around us? Now, I have like 5 minutes left, and I'm sorry, I really had a lot to talk about tonight. But I may have a caller. I'm not sure. Let me see. A caller, are you there? 314-315?
Hi, Terry. It's Harriet.
Hi, Harriet. I know I said this week I was going to get you back on air. I'm so sorry, Harriet. I just had a lot to say, and I thank you for calling in.
You have hit on so many topics that I can speak on that I got firsthand knowledge of. I don't know where to start.
I know. It's deep, Harriet, isn't it? It's really deep.
It is very deep. Being a retired teacher, from the St. Louis Public Schools, I can speak on so many of that. About teaching the test, oh, yes, I did it. I monitored classrooms where teachers were teaching the test. Teachers for America, oh, yes, they were coworkers of mine right beside me. I used to see these young white kids come out of school, be in our school 1 year, and disappear, never see them again. Now, this is public school, okay?
Right.
I've seen where the whole system was they've gone through three different ways of teaching the children all over the district. Years ago, there was a superintendent who wrote the whole curriculum that everybody had to teach his curriculum, okay? And they did. That was Kottmeyer. They did that, okay? Then that they threw that out. Then when they were introducing the charter schools in St. Louis, they started with all these different models. I was in a school that was chosen to explore these different models. We explored these different models in our school to see which one would fit our children. Okay.
Like our
lab. Or robot or something.
Wow.
You know, we had the big argument that the state board test was not geared to the inner city child. So
right.
I threw that out. They rewrote the test, okay. They rewrote the test, but still you had to teach the children the test. You had to teach them testing methods, okay?
Right.
As you said, what were they really learning? After test time, as far as the children were concerned, school's over with, okay?
Right.
So you couldn't teach them anything else after that because all year long, that's all you were doing was teaching the test.
What you focused on. That's what
okay,
I witnessed at the charter school, Harriet. That's exactly what I witnessed, and it was horrible. Horrible.
Right, but you said that was in what you saw was in charter schools. I'm telling you, that was the entire
public school
system. Okay,
right.
That's what they were doing here. Okay, now real quickly, the wetlands. Now you know we got wetlands out here in Chesterfield, and when we had all that time back in the 90s. Okay, and they were telling the people you got to get out of there. They took all that wetlands, like you say, that was God created that for a reason, so that when the river overflowed, it could flow out there and then flow right back into its banks. Big money, and they chased the farmers that were out there that learned how to work with the land and the flooding. They chased them all out. They drained the water out. They tried to restructure the river, and now they got big fancy homes and corporations out there and businesses. I said, yeah, but don't worry, nature's gonna come back and flood you all again. Okay.
Harry. You are definitely bringing the truth. I really love when you bring the truth from first hand
knowledge, man. I can't believe what she's hitting on. Okay, I had told you 2 weeks ago about a friend of mine that went down to New Orleans. They wouldn't even let them into District 9. They wouldn't even let them see what was going on. Oh, no, we can't let you over there.
Right.
Why can't you let them over there? Okay. I got a girlfriend right now that's down there. As soon as I can, I'm going to talk to her. Tell me, what do you see? Tell me, what are you looking at? So I can tell her to your
list. That's what I want to do, yeah. I'm sorry, but they count me down. I got 1 minute left. So we're going to talk again next week. Please listen, because we're going to break it down about the effects. And I thank you, Harry, so much. And as I say every week, John 8:32, and you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. And I thank Harry for bringing the truth to us this week. And stay true and be blessed until next week. Thanks so much, Harriet.
You're welcome.
Good night, you guys.
Doesn't care about black people. The city has changed dramatically, tragically, and perhaps irreversibly.